Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
I'm Pat. And views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, speakers, and do not reflect the views and opinions of the radio station, KKRN, its management, staff, or underwriters.
Now, this is a discussion of tolerance that we're going to give tonight. There's no right or wrong. There's no right or left. It's about tolerance and how tolerant we really are. We might touch on some points of view that you hold dear. The points of view are not what we're talking about tonight. What we're talking about is your tolerance of others' points of view, and it works both ways.
And the definition of tolerance is the willingness to accept the existence of opinions or behavior that does not necessarily agree with you.
And there's a second one, a fair, objective, and permissive attitude towards those whose opinions, beliefs, practices, or origins differ from your own. The interest in and concern for ideas, opinions, practices foreign to one's own, a liberal, undogmatic viewpoint.
And as he said, it's a permissive attitude that you carry towards others.
And how many of us who think that religious people, for instance, are dogmatic when we ourselves are dogmatic?
We all have some level of intolerance, and what we want to do is just bring forth the discussion of what tolerance and intolerance is and how it's affecting our society.
And as Pat said, we're all intolerant. I think many of us don't want to admit it. We want to just say the other person is.
Yes.
And so we're going to show what intolerance really is. There's disagreement, and then there's intolerance. They're two completely different things.
Right. And one of the first topics we're going to cover is political correctness. And it's how it's gotten to this point in our society of being intolerant of any kind of harmful or hurtful comment made by anyone about anyone else.
Exactly. And how, you know, discomfort is actually how progress is made. When people were too cold, they learned how to make fire. You know, when food was too hard to digest, they learned how to use fire. When you're uncomfortable with your job, you look for a better job. When you're uncomfortable with your status, you try to improve it. Discomfort's a good thing. It produces.
But our discomfort with political correctness has gone too far. It is now limiting free speech.
Exactly. If we have an idea that we think is right, our ideas need to be challenged, because if we do not allow someone to challenge our ideas, then you obviously don't have faith that your idea is in fact a good one, because if it is, it should hold up in the face of challenge.
And political correctness is not always just a challenge. It can be a comment. It can be anything that's not acceptable to somebody else we consider politically incorrect. And down to no, everyone's afraid to say anything anymore.
Right. You're seeing fewer and fewer comedians performing at colleges now because their comedy might make someone uncomfortable. And that's just sad that we're going to lose the ability to laugh at ourselves.
And one of the negatives that has recently come out about our extensive political correctness about everything is when the San Bernardino incident happened and those people were killed. The neighbor who had seen Arab-dressed people coming and going into the garage at night was afraid to come forth because she was afraid to be labeled as politically incorrect or a racist. So she didn't even go to the police.
Right. And that's the problem, is we're so afraid. I mean, fear has always been a negative thing. Caution's a good thing, but making any decision out of fear is not a good one. And being afraid to report something that you consider dangerous because your fear of what will happen to you for reporting it is worse, that's another kind of sad thing.
Yes, and political correctness has gotten a lot of traction in the last decade. We did not have this back in the 1980s and 90s. And yes, people were ignorant. They made stupid comments. They appeared to be idiots when they made derogatory comments about people of all ways, shapes, and whatevers. But we've carried it to the extreme now. It's gone to the complete opposite.
Imagine if the conservatives of the 1960s had successfully prevented any speech from those students who were protesting the colleges. If the students hadn't even been allowed to speak, if opposing points of view hadn't been heard, where would we be today?
So some of the things we're going to touch on today may sound like they're politically incorrect, but what we want to do is bring forth a discussion about some of the words we're not even allowed to use anymore or that have been defined as politically incorrect. We want to bring those forth tonight and have an open discussion. We want you to think about how this might represent tolerance or intolerance and where maybe we can all massage where we're coming from.
And examine yourself. All of us are intolerant, so somewhere you can find some intolerance, and that's a place where you can begin to make progress in changing that. But if you refuse to examine it or admit that you have any intolerance, then there's nothing to be done.
Right. And one of the, talking about political correctness, one of the things that comes up is the word profiling. And it's an incorrect activity based on everything that's going on right now. Yet, if there's a serial killer going on in a city, a serial rapist even, they immediately start profiling 30-year-old white guys because those are the people that have historically been identified as the serial rapist or serial murderer. And yet we were not allowed to profile anyone else.
Right. And Juan Williams, who's a very famous liberal, was on public television and was an employee there. And they asked him about, someone dressed in Muslim clothing at an airport, if it would cause him any trepidation. And he admitted that seeing him dressed very obviously in certain types of clothing would cause fear. And he literally was drummed out of that company and was taken off the air. And he's now on Fox News. But just for saying that, for admitting the truth, he didn't like the fact that he felt that way. He was just saying that it was an instinctive reaction.
And Muslims are not protected any more than Christians or Jews or Mormons or any other religion, but somehow it's been politically incorrect to criticize them. And this country was built on freedom of speech and freedom of religion, and it may be people from the Middle East we now call Muslims because that's the biggest part of their population, and yet somehow it's become totally incorrect.
That's one of our biggest problems with tolerance, is no longer tolerating Christian religion for some reason. Now, I'm a Buddhist, and I'm actually in an evangelical college taking courses, and I'm honest about what I am, and we have lively and honest discussions. If you're one of those people who believes that Christianity or other religions are a myth and that they're misled and that they should, progress to a more logical lifestyle or whatever, how can you hope to get there if you can't even discuss their religion with them, if they can't bring it up? How is there going to be a discussion or any movement?
And maybe the Christians are right about forgiving your enemy, turning the other cheek, that somehow forgiveness brings awakening and enlightenment.
That's very possibly true. But just think about how any subject that you feel strongly about, how can there be progress made when there's no discussion of opposing views? I mean true, deep, honest discussion where you listen to their point of view and you can critique it based upon its merits.
And it goes back to that freedom of speech. The word Muslim is not a negative connotation to anyone. Sure, there have been some terrorists that are Muslim, but there have been bad Christians. There have been bad of all ethnic groups and all religions have committed crimes. And yet somehow it's negative for us to use the word Muslim. And if we use the word Middle Easterner, that's not a bad word. So we've carried it too far, and now it's got this religious connotation to it, where I think a lot of people were thinking of it regionally. It's Middle Eastern religion, and so we talk a lot about people from there as Muslims.
If a kind of a demented Christian militiaman commits a heinous crime, or wants to commit a heinous crime and he calls himself a Christian, should we not call him Christian because we're attacking his religion when he says that's what he is? In my opinion, he would not be a true Christian, but he's calling himself that.
And him, he is as equally in violation of the law as anyone else and should be, you know, punished in the same format.
And we should call him what he says he is, because his perspective is part of what brought him to do what he's doing. And the only way to try to change that is by addressing him on those terms.
An example of this misuse of words is California, as of January 1st of this year, passed a law that the word aliens cannot be used on any state document or piece of paper or by the staff of anybody on the California payroll, that aliens is now illegal and they have to use the word immigrant. How ridiculous is this?
Well, the thing about it is that these terms keep changing on us. I mean, we've done it with races. We've done it with genders. We keep changing things. Like, someone who hates a gay person is going to hate them no matter what you call them. And yet we keep moving through the different names because this one now has become derogatory. So we make a new name, and then it becomes derogatory. So we make another new name.
And
you know,
bigotry,
we need to get on with it.
And bigotry is negative no matter what word they use. You can tell by how they use the word in a sentence that they're being a bigot or racially discriminating or whatever it is. It's not the word. This immigration wording is ridiculous. It's now they're illegal immigrants, not illegal aliens. Well, I remember when alien was ET. They came from another planet, not another country.
And illegal is out of favor now. It hasn't been made illegal in California yet, but it will be. And then there'll be, I mean, it's now, I think the preferred is undocumented. You know, things are what they are. The name of them, changing the name doesn't affect it. It may affect it temporarily, but then it becomes derogatory and we have to change it again.
But undocumented means to me like the Gestapo, where you had to have papers to travel from one state or to another state or one community to another. That's not what this country is about. And we've had freedom of movement, freedom to go anywhere we've wanted. And so to call them undocumented refers to a society that's based on having documents to do everything. And we're not that kind of society.
Well, people promoting the idea of open borders would probably say that that's true, that that's what we're doing. We're treating them like Gestapo. So they would probably think that's a good name.
But the only document that you need to travel to another country is a visa. And they can get a visa. They can get a, you know, all kinds of visas to come to school, to come to work, to come visit. So it's not, the word undocumented to me sounds more, I don't know, wrong than
it's true.
Immigrant.
The good news, I guess, is that it is California, and in this country of states, you could leave California. So when the feds make a word illegal, that's a little more troublesome.
Yes, and there's a fine line now going on with the illegal immigrant, and that's the sanctuary cities. And I think the illegal immigrant sometimes can be harmful to those that are legally here. And the sanctuary city is really outside the laws of the state and the federal government.
Right. It was, you know, the idea behind the sanctuary city, I get it. People who believe that you should be allowed to be here, whether you're a citizen or not, if that's your belief, I understand that you believe a sanctuary city will let you be here, and that's all well and good. The problem is that sanctuary cities now, as with everything else we do politically and socially, have gotten to the point where you can be a felon who's a danger to society, and the sanctuary city may let you out of jail just so that the feds can't get you and deport you. And that's where it becomes warped like everything else.
When I was a kid and lived in Southern California, every city was a sanctuary city. If you got into the state, you lived here safely. You lived here without harassment unless you committed a crime. So I don't see why we need cities that are identified as sanctuary cities other than for criminals.
Right.
The definition does not suit in the state of California anyway. Anywhere in Southern California, there are many, many illegal immigrants, and nobody thinks anything of it. I mean, even as a person doing business with them. We don't harass them as going into their stores or anything like that.
But back to tolerance, you know, the problem is that we can't have the discussion, because if you have a certain point of view, if you go to a college and you have a certain point of view, you're going to be shut down. They're either going to disinvite you when they find out what you're going to talk about, or they're going to shout you down. Either way, what they're doing is avoiding any real discussion. And that always means to me that you're afraid that your point of view really isn't valid. Otherwise, you wouldn't be afraid to have it open to discussion.
And your comment earlier about comedians who are not going to colleges because they're getting criticized for being politically incorrect, because, in my opinion, comedy is a reflection of society as a whole. We make fun of ourselves. If it's a woman comedian, she makes fun of being a woman, on and on. And this is always politically incorrect, but it is funny. And that's what we should take away from this.
And we've proven now medically that laughter is good for your health, and we're taking away laughter. And let's face it, look back at the history of comedy. Comedy is always about the discomfiture of somebody.
Yes.
Somebody has been banged or beaten or tripped or fallen or done something really stupid and embarrassing or something. Many times comedians are they pick on themselves. You know, we have to lighten up a little bit. Literally, comedians are saying they're not going to do colleges because someone will be offended. My goodness.
And think of Jay Leno. I mean, he wouldn't make comedy out of every idiot in the news, both political parties. Everybody was fair game, and it was hilarious. He made fun of what was on the news.
Right. And you know, we're all funny. First, we need to learn to laugh at ourselves, and then we'll be more comfortable laughing at other people, and hopefully they can laugh at themselves too. But comedy is healthy, and we're losing a valuable part of our society because nobody wants to be challenged at all anymore, be uncomfortable a little bit.
Well, the college thing is getting a little out of hand, and I think a lot of it has to do with social upbringing. The Oklahoma dean that came out and said that college is not a daycare. He was talking about this generation of college students don't want anyone harmed, anything negative said about anybody. They don't want to be somehow hurtful in conversation or in lectures or speakers. And this is not part of reality.
No, and Pat and I had an off-the-air discussion that got a little heated about who was at fault for this. And I, you know, she rightfully wants to say that students need to grow up and, you know, grow a little skin and be able to tolerate some uncomfortable ideas. But I do believe I've followed the college phenomenon a lot. And the college encourages these kids to be victims. At every little thing, they tell them, well, if you might be a little bit offended, we have a safe room for you.
But again, students, when they go to college, they're 18 years old or older. And think about it. When you were 18 years old, you were out on the streets. You were making a living. That's part of being an adult. You are going to be out there in the real world very soon if you're in college. And this is a dog-eat-dog world.
Now, besides even that, you know, our universities are supposed to be arenas of discovery and an exchange of ideas. And some of those ideas are going to be uncomfortable. As I said before, discomfort is a good thing. It encourages people to do new things and to grow and to learn and to change. You know, when I was a kid, we were taught that sticks and stones will break my bones and words will never hurt me. And that's true. I mean, if you say, you know, yell fire in a theater, that's different than saying words. That's giving misinformation in a way that's going to cause immediate harm. If you say, go shoot that person, that's a different thing. But when you say that person ought to be shot, that's a borderline statement. That's you making a comment about somebody you don't like. And when you don't let someone say something that's offensive to you, how can you change their point of view if you don't even know what their point of view is? And oftentimes you think you know what it is, and you don't let them speak it. You don't know for sure. I want to talk about Julia Shulevitz of the New York Times, and this is just, to me, it's hilarious. I think it's comedy, but she lists examples of the demands of students that verge on the incredible. In one instance, when a student group at Brown University called the Sexual Assault Task Force, they discovered that a debate was to be held where one participant, a libertarian, would slam the term rape culture. The group protested to the administration. So the president, Katrina Paxson, scheduled a talk concurrent with the debate that would provide research and facts about the role of culture in sexual assault. A safe space was created, and these are students, adult college students we're talking about, for students upset by the debate that included cookies, coloring books, bubbles, Play-Doh, calming music, pillows, blankets, and a video of puppies.
Now, my opinion, we're not tough enough on these college kids.
And I agree, but these colleges are teaching them to be victims. I mean, what if I had a bad experience with a dying puppy in my childhood, and the puppy video makes me uncomfortable or stresses me out? Where's my safe place? Do we really think that a person who's truly traumatized by sexual assault will ever have a happy life if they're disabled every time there's a discussion of that subject? Should that kind of language continue to have that much control? If one is a racist, shouldn't we want to know who they are? How can we if we make their language illegal or punishable? Will that somehow make them not be racist? My contention is it will make them more racist. And I want to say that those who believe that sex on campus is immoral adultery are about to get their deepest wishes fulfilled. Who will even want to involve themselves when you have to go through a continuous interview process during a romantic interlude? And that's what some colleges are demanding, a continuous, yes, I agree to this at every step of the process. Can you imagine? But this is not comedy. I'm not making this up. This is what our colleges are doing.
And colleges were always intended to be those ideas, open ideas. But we're now seem to be that it's only the opinions of professors, the college themselves, or the current student body. The evolution of student bodies over the decades has changed considerably. And, you know, in the 30s, everybody wore suits to college and dressed in dresses and high heels, and everything was very proper. You didn't go out with someone without a proper introduction. But as times went on, things got looser and looser until, you know, women's lib and women have the same rights as men. And now we have helicopter parents that raise kids to be afraid of everything. And college is where you are getting your training wheels for the real adult life. Get over it. Time to pull up your big girl pants or your big boy pants and face the big world.
We finally empowered women to stand alone and be all that they could be in the 60s and the 70s. And we showed that women can be anything that a man can be, in many cases better. But now it's we tried so hard that we've overdone it, and now we have this idea that women can only be everything they can be if the government's there to protect them and to help them every step of the way.
Well, the workplace is totally different. It's really nothing more than like high school with adults with thicker hides, because you have gossip that is mean, you have backstabbing individuals, you have people that are trying to get your job, people that are afraid to go on vacation for fear that someone's going to take over their job. So the real working world is not a kind place, and the kids have coming out of college have to be prepared to enter this world. So college is where they should face these hard facts, harmful criticism, people that don't say that you're rewarded for showing up. You better, you know, comply. You better make the grade. You better get the grade. That's not how it is. Apparently, the helicopter parents are now sending the kids off to college, and the students are demanding all of these things that mom did for them, they now want the college to do for them.
Well, but the colleges are encouraging it. The colleges, I've seen many cases where the college, someone at the college, an authoritative figure, has told a student, you're a victim. You can't help yourself. This, you have to be protected.
We have to get over this victim mentality. That the song from Frozen, Let It Go, Let It Go, that's right. You have to let it go. That applies to all of us. And college, think about these kids that are in college. Did they not watch all these shows on Survivor where these people stab each other in the back? That is the real world. All of these sitcoms, which mirror society, They're terrible. The people are terrible to each other. And the kids go to college thinking that they're going to be protected?
Well, no, they don't go there thinking that. That's my point. The college professors, the authoritative figures in the college, tell them you need to be offended by this and you need a safe space because your feelings could be hurt by this. This is not the students going there. In some cases, they're expecting it because their parents have ruined them by that point. But the colleges are encouraging that. You know, when you're a kid in college, you look at your instructors as people who can teach you something. So that means you've given them authority to teach you, and they're telling you you're a victim. So you start to think that way.
Unfortunately, that's not the way the real world works.
It is not.
And not everything is about you. I mean, the college student, not everything is about them and about what you're doing or what you're believing. It needs to be in the greater concept of how you're interacting with that college student.
That that professor that you mentioned, that dean that said, you know, the kids need to grow up, the college kids, it's not a daycare. Well, you know why that happened, why that dean is saying that? Because several deans of colleges have quit just because some students started yelling about something they said. And I think the deans are starting to go, whoa, I think we've gone a little overboard here, and now it's coming back to bite us.
And a lot of that, it goes back to political correctness and the freedom of speech. Even the dean doesn't have freedom of speech. You know, youths are usually the ones that have ideals. And the ideals of the youth are always admirable, and we all, deep down inside, hope that they'll prevail in those ideals. But the nature of man, it's not realistic that great ideals are always going to prevail because everyone's out looking out for themselves.
No, what matters is what you do about things that happen to you. That's all that matters.
Is your response.
Yeah.
And that's the only control that you have. And unfortunately, time brings cynicism. And cynicism may bring attitude, which isn't always good, and it can make you intolerant. So we'll take a break.
Yep, we'll take a break. We're discussing tolerance and the lack of tolerance and why we think we're tolerant when we're truly not. Be back in a few.
I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
You're listening to Examine Life on KKRN. The views and opinions expressed on this program are of the speakers and do not reflect the views and opinions of the radio station, KKRN. Its management, staff, or underwriters.
Now we're talking tonight about tolerance and the lack of tolerance.
And tolerance is really respect. It's you respect the other person's right to have an opinion or to believe the way they believe. That's what tolerance is.
Yes, and everyone has a point of view, and I would venture to say also that everyone has a valid point of view to some degree. Maybe it's only a small. I mean, there's some fairly, I would think, ugly people in the world, but we need to listen to other people. We need to respect them just because they're people, at least until we know where they're coming from.
And that respect is often has to be earned. If you're a bigot, you're not going to get any respect. Everyone's going to discount whatever you say because of that. And we need to earn that respect by giving other people respect.
Right. And that's, I mean, the reason you're not getting the respect is because you don't offer respect.
And intolerance is often a product of fear and or anger. If we don't understand someone else, their ethnicity or their religious beliefs or their lifestyle, we're fearful of them.
Or maybe we're so invested in our own point of view that we're afraid that we don't want anyone to challenge it because we don't want it to break down. But in fact, our point of view could be flawed.
And we don't want to admit that we're wrong, the fear of being wrong. So there's a lot of fears that can come around intolerance. And a lot of times that leads to anger, or you're already angry because somehow you have been offended by this ethnicity or this religious group or whatever. And so your intolerance is somehow your disrespect for them.
A good example, I was listening to a political pundit who has a radio show earlier tonight who made that very comment about the opposing view and the people that have it being afraid to admit after all these years that they might be wrong, and doesn't see the inherent lack of tolerance in his own comment about perhaps his point of view might be wrong or might be partially wrong, might have some flaws. Nope, those other people, they're all wrong. And they're afraid to admit it, and that's all the problem is.
Right, and that's not true. Both people have parts of them that are wrong and many parts that are right, and it's not a right or wrong thing. It is give respect to the other person's point of view, discuss it, argue it, but don't get angry about it. Oftentimes the anger comes from you feel like your rights are being violated or you're not being respected.
And that's how this massive intolerance has come to be, that none of us wants to entertain another person's point of view, especially now when it comes to politics or religion.
And remember, your rights end where mine begin, and my rights end where yours begin. I don't have the right to trample on yours, and you don't have the right to trample my rights. So, you know, everyone has the same rights.
And get over the victim mentality. Newsflash, we're all victims. What we do when we're victimized is all that matters.
Yes, our response. I want to bring up the case of the county clerk who wouldn't issue marriage licenses to gays in her county. And she was a representative of the government. She was the authority for that county. And she allowed her personal opinion to cloud her judgment. Her responsibility was to the public, and that was all of the public. That couple, despite if they were gay or not, they were mandated by law to go and get a marriage license from her. She was the only one that was capable of doing that. And she was representing the government in that capacity. And it was her duty and responsibility to issue that license regardless of her personal opinion.
And she didn't have to do that. She could have stepped down. If you have that firm religious conviction, well, you can step down. Sacrificing a job is a small thing to do when your spiritual beliefs are being challenged. But you don't have the right, when someone is forced to come to you for as a supplicant, you don't have the right for your personal religious view to force an action upon them.
And I realized the law changed during her term. She was elected, so she was serving a term, and I realized that the law changed during that term. But she had the right to step down and forfeit her position if she did not want to fulfill it.
That's correct. And on an opposite case, one of the cases where the bakery refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple, that's kind of the opposite scenario. They have a private business. Their business is their means of living. if they want to refuse a person for any reason, and it was kind of stupid of them to say out loud why they were refusing it, if they want to refuse it on principle, though, it's going to affect their business, but that is their business. They have every right to refuse to serve anybody. Whatever happened to this idea that we have the right to refuse service? Why are we all of a sudden micromanaging how and when we have that right?
And the competition in small businesses is huge. And if this lady doesn't want to make your wedding cake, why would you want to deal with her? Go to somebody who would make you this beautiful, fantastic cake because they want to.
Right. And see, we mentioned at the outset of this program that there was no right or wrong, no left or right. And here you can see a prime example between these two cases. What you need is freedom and people to make their own choices. In the case of the county clerk, there was no freedom for that gay couple. And so she needed to step back, either assign somebody else to do it or quit the job, whatever the case may be, to ensure individual rights. But in the case of the bakery, that's a private business. They should be allowed to do whatever they want to do.
And it also draws a fine line between tolerance and intolerance. It's the height of hypocrisy to, I want to have, you have tolerance for me, but I don't want to have tolerance for you. The idea that the gay couple was entitled to their rights, and they should have been tolerated. You know, the lady should have just said, fine, I'll make you a cake, or I can't. I've got company coming, whatever. But they should have respected the idea that she did not want to do business with her, with them. She had that right. They should have had tolerance for her, despite her intolerance. But there's a fine line here of crossing of, I want to be a victim. It was the victim mentality that overstepped that line.
Right.
And I think had they not had the victim mentality, they would have just gone to another business and gotten a beautiful, fantastic cake because that person wanted to do them, wanted the business, wanted to make a happy customer.
Right. There comes a time when you have to ignore behavior that really doesn't have a major effect on your life. Now, if the person was threatening their life or going to cause a problem in their marriage or something like that, then that's an injury thing. That's a pursuit of life, a pursuit of happiness issue. But when someone refuses your business, and Pat's right, they should have just kept their mouth shut about why, but they did want to make their religious statement, so they made it. You know what? Get over it. Move on. Find some decent, intelligent people and get your cake made. It would probably be a better cake. And get on with your life.
Well, not only that, but who wants to do business with a jerk that shoots himself in the foot by not doing and making a profit on their own business of making cakes? I mean, this is the lady stupid, but you can't fix stupid. But you can fix the mentality of I'm a victim and I somehow want to be proven.
That's right.
So what you think of yourself, you become. Those who want tolerance should also give tolerance.
Listen to opposing ideas, especially now when we're dealing with politics and religion. If you're a profoundly, strongly felt atheist, listen to your religious counterpart. That's the only way, if their religion is a myth, it's the only way you're going to break it, is by having an open discussion and pointing out facts. Don't be afraid of their religion. There's something a little psychologically interesting about the fact that some people are afraid of religion.
Well, live and let live is tolerance in society. And right now, that lack of tolerance is tearing our society apart on every level. And the political correctness is an absolute poster for this lack of tolerance in society. And we need to get back to that. Don't judge others to your belief as that's the only way to believe.
Right. We are actually, in some cases, we're treating people in similar, maybe not as injuriously, but we're treating people as similar to the way these women were treated during the Salem witch trials.
And that proved to be profitable, didn't it?
Yeah, that was... That was a little nasty.
That was a poor judgment on the part of many who had intolerance. It was not only religious, but also anything they did not know, which was the supernatural, you might call it. But in any event, it, you know, wiped out a huge part of the population because of fear.
And to be honest about it, the bottom line was, and this is the case in many discussions of politics now and the refusal to have discussions, was that many times you accused your neighbor of being a witch so that you could acquire their land.
Or some other, yeah, and shady deal.
Politically, that's what people do now. They espouse political views, refuse to listen to any other views, so that they can promote their stature in politics, not even their viewpoint. They just want to promote their stature.
And, you know, fear can be a mob mentality as easily as bigots' ignorance is prejudice. That mob mentality of unacceptable intolerance for anybody else is nothing but a mob.
Right. And we're seeing lots of mobs now. It's happening in colleges a lot. People are invited to speak at a college. Maybe a group of students finds out about it and disagrees with their political or religious beliefs. And one of two things happens. They either get the college to disinvite the speaker, or they shout them down so that they can't speak. That is intolerance. And if those people think they're tolerant, they misunderstand what the word means.
And it goes back to the freedom of speech. This person has every right to come and speak on your behalf. You're a student. You should be there for enlightenment, for education, not for lack of tolerance.
Challenge their ideas by discussing their ideas with them and challenging their ideas. Shutting them up doesn't accomplish anything, and it certainly doesn't allow you to evolve.
And you have them as a captive audience right there for the mob that is challenging their viewpoints. There's 10 of you and one of them. It's the perfect opportunity to ask those tough questions and have them legitimize their answers to you if you don't agree with that speaker.
Let's move on to the female-male tolerance.
Yes, this is another story that genetically and primally ingrained is in us is the idea that women were nesters and men were the hunters' providers. And it's only been with recent social change, meaning the women in the workplace after World War II and women going to college and getting educated, that our roles have been massaged into a more commonality for both of us, males and females.
And, you know, we talk about this military business with women in the military, and there are women who can accomplish everything physically that a man can accomplish. And some recent combat veterans have admitted, and these are special forces guys, and they've admitted that the problem isn't women. The problem is men and the way men feel about women.
The problem is sex.
That could cause a problem in the ranks. And they're admitting it's not that a woman is too weak. It's that we men are idiots.
And irrelevant of that is the sex overtones of male-female relationships makes it difficult for men to step back and let a woman do that job.
Right. And smart men are admitting that. And again, there are many women capable. And women have always been mentally capable. There are many women who are physically capable of doing a special forces job. But men have a weakness. At least some do.
Yes. Politically, currently, we have two capable women running for president, and we should not make it about sexist on any level. These women are both accomplished women, and females do not need this. As far as I'm concerned, this is a step backwards. I saw that glass ceiling. That doesn't exist anymore. These women are both highly accomplished, and neither one of them have to run on the fact that they're female, nor do we ever look to any male candidate to say he's running as a male. It's ridiculous to even think that.
And I have to contrast the two a little bit on their campaign styles. When Mr. Trump made a comment, Hillary Clinton went on to talk about how he, you know, he's sexist and he makes sexist comments and he's against women and all of that. But when he made a very discouraging, sexually oriented comment about Carly Fiorina, what Carly said was, "I know when a man's flirting with me. That's the approach that you take. Blow it off. Get over it. Some men are sexist. Some women are sexists. Some women act like brainless, you know, blonde joke victims, and some women don't. Some men are, you know, wife beaters. Some men are not. Get over it. If a man makes a sexist comment, that's not the guy for you. Move on.
Not only that, but when a man makes a derogatory sexist comment, everybody knows what an idiot he is. He's just showing that he's a moron. So let him go, you know, go on with your own day.
Exactly. Between the two, I just think Carly's, you know, hers was just a much more sophisticated intelligence response. She failed to engage him. She just blew him off for what he was.
This lady fought the corporate ladder, which is where there was a glass ceiling for decades. And she broke through that ladder, and I'm sure she had a lot of sexist comments made to her on the way up on a very personal level. And Mrs. Clinton may have been insulated by her position of power. She was a lawyer. She was the wife of a governor. She was the wife of a president. And she may have been more insulated by these sexist comments that were not personally made to her, like Carly probably was subjected coming up the ranks of corporate America.
Right. Yeah, that's probably too. Carly learned at an early age how to overcome those kind of things.
Right. And I suspect that Hillary may have been in a position of power most of the time as an attorney. And no one would say to a female attorney some sexist comment, most likely. There are a few morons out there, but by and large, not so much. So I think it comes from different backgrounds. But they're both capable women. And all the men that are running, we don't ever mention that their maleness. You know, that's not part of the equation. We don't even talk about them being aggressive or anything that is male characteristic.
Well, actually, when some of the candidates talk about Donald Trump, for instance, they talk about him in ways that if he was doing things that might have been stereotypical of women, the comments they're making, someone could say they were being sexist. But because he's a man, they're making those comments about him, and nobody's saying anything about it. And it's just this idea that we're overly sensitive. Let's face it, women have had a tough haul in earlier years. It's better now for women. So the women that succeeded in those days, think how tough they are and how smart they had to be. It's just like in the days of segregation, the black people that made it, think how much more intelligent and strong and vibrant they were than their white counterparts. That's the way you have to look at it.
Yes, and a lot has come forward with women's rights as well as civil rights in the racist communities. And we don't want to take a step back in time and diminish all of the accomplishments of the wonderful people that have contributed to our society by marginalizing those accomplishments and saying, oh, you're still subjected to, you know, this racism or this sexism or whatever it is. I think it's a slap in the face to all of those that have accomplished a lot.
Right. This, you know, attempt to fix things, which is typical overcompensation with the affirmative action program, was to make it so that if you were a minority and you succeeded in life on your own merits, people didn't think you did. They assumed it was affirmative action. So it didn't really help people that much.
And that's unfortunate because these, Ben Carson and President Obama are perfect examples of highly accomplished minorities who no one would question their intelligence. They went to college, and I don't care how they went to college. You have to get through on intelligence and, you know, stick-to-itness and all of those things that make you successful. And those two people are highly successful.
Right. Ben Carson made it through college by achieving. He came from a very, very poor background, single-parent family, a lot of poverty, but a mother who believed in self-sufficiency and who avoided welfare. Deliberately, she avoided welfare and ostentatiously avoided welfare to prove to her kids that you can make it your own way. She frequently told them, you're the captain of your own ship. That's why he's successful. He's successful because she would not let him be a victim of all of this help that the government wants to give us.
And, you know, there are many poor, underprivileged white kids that pull, you know, their bootstraps up and say, I'm not going to live this way my whole life. And they dig themselves out of that gutter that they were born into. And they have huge accomplishments. And they don't talk about where they came from. They are going forward in life.
So we kind of got off track with that. But keep in mind, having tolerance is about that, is about understanding how other people live their lives and where their point of view comes from. And letting yourself believe that possibly your ideas may be completely flawed, may be partially flawed, may just need a little bit of nuance. Maybe they're all perfectly wonderful ideas. But you have nothing, everything in the world, in the universe, is relative. And you have to compare your ideas to other completely opposing ideas. And when you don't allow yourself to even hear the other thoughts, especially the uncomfortable, the really, really uncomfortable thoughts, then your own ideas and your own beliefs have no validity because there's nothing to base them against.
And be tolerant of others because you've not walked in their shoes. You don't know that maybe religion was the savior from a criminal life or alcoholism or something else. You don't know where they have come from, and you would not want to be judged. And so be tolerant of others. And take a look at your own, what you're asking from others.
There was a very important religious figure who once was told to stone a woman because she was a prostitute. And he simply picked up his rock and said, I'll hand it to anyone who's not committed a sin, and they can throw the rock.
Yeah, those who live in glass houses should not throw stones.
Right. So be you know, open your mind. Back in the 60s, it's true that a lot of the ideas that these students were rebelling against were too firmly entrenched ideas of the time. The society had just become too
established, they call it. Establishment.
Too established in one direction, and everybody was expected to just follow the toe the line, and they broke that open. But now, in the intervening 30 or 40 years, they've become the thing that they hated. They won't tolerate any other ideas. Being a libertarian or a liberal or a conservative, all of those things always have fresh ways to look at them, and you should not avoid any of them having validity in your worldview. They all have something to offer.
And discount the voices coming, the loudest voices in the crowd that are terribly intolerant of the other side. Regardless of what side you're on, question, why are they so intolerant of the other point of view? What's happening in the Middle East, this ISIS crisis, is based on intolerance. They have no tolerance for any other type of religion or society, and look where it's gotten us.
Right. They believe that if you don't believe their way, that you're worthy of death or slavery.
And look how
that's the ultimate intolerance.
And it's impacting the whole world. So one person's intolerance does affect other people. And it's contagious, unfortunately, and not easy to remedy.
Don't,
so try and have some tolerance.
Don't, you know, if you're not religious, listen to religious people. There are many, many religious ideas that no matter what kind of a myth or religion or belief they're based in, they're good ideas. So listen to them. If you have a fear of speaking to a religious person about their religion, there's a weakness in your ideas that you're afraid of exposing. That's the only thing that I can think of as to why you would just challenge those ideas.
So let's all be a little more tolerant of each other, listen to the other point of view, and discount those loud voices that keep criticizing everyone else. There's just not enough time for all of us to be so critical of each other.
As Pat said earlier, your rights end where mine begin, and my rights end where yours begin.
And I promise I will be tolerant of the drive-through clerk at the drive-through place that gets my order wrong. I will be tolerant.
Yeah. Even though they're making, what, $9, $10 an hour now?
As of January 1st, the minimum wage went to $10 in California.
Regardless of how poorly they do the job and how much money they lose for their boss, they have to pay them a minimum amount of money.
Well, there's just so many little irritations in life that we need to grow tolerant of. And unfortunately, they add up over a day or a week or a month, and we become less and less tolerant. This is Examine Life. You can reach us at Examine Life. What is the email? What is it?
Examine Life at KKRN.org.
Thank you for listening to KKRN Bella Vista at 88.5 FM.
Programming on KKRN is supported in part by listeners like you and Mountain Valley's health centers, serving the Intermountain communities by providing primary care. Appointments can be made in Burnie at 335-5457, in Fall River at 336-6535, or in Big Valley at 294-5241. Medi-Cal, Medicare, and private insurance are all accepted. There is a sliding scale available. On the web, mountainmtnvalleyhc.org. Thanks, Mountain Valley, for supporting KKRN.
This is Sheila Barnes from Happy Valley. You are listening to KKRN 88.5 FM, Bella Vista.
Programming on KKRN is made possible by listeners like you and in part by anewscafe.com, where North State news, color, and commentary can be found online. The online news source brings regional writers and photographers together to give news that is positively North State with universal topics too. Found online at anewscafe.com.
Programming on KKRN Community Radio is brought to you in part by Les